We are nearing the end of our journey through Acts. Sum total, we'll be in there about 40 different weeks when it's all said and done, and it's been a great journey. We're getting near the end. We just finished a section that we call Paul on Trial. And if you remember, when Paul was on trial, he threw the one card he had on the table. He appealed to Caesar. He could do that as a Roman citizen. We saw that in Acts chapter 25. Look at this. Paul started speaking here in verse 11. He said, "If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar." And then the governor responded, "Then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, 'To Caesar you have appealed. To Caesar you shall go.'" And so what's going to happen next is Paul is going to be escorted from Caesarea off to Rome by a Roman centurion. That's a Roman soldier over about 100 other soldiers, a commander. And Paul will be taken there under military guard. So what the soldier does is he goes on the Google, right? And he looks for the best fare, the fewest layovers, right? No, of course not. In fact, they don't even get a military ship. Military ships would have been reserved really for naval battle or troop transport or something like that. In this case, what this commander and his soldiers and all the prisoners need to do, they go down to the shore and they basically do like the sea version of hitchhiking. Right? They look for a ship going in their direction, and they say, "Hey, can we go?" And they'll pay fare, and they get taken along with them. So that's how they start out. Now, this then picks up in verse 27, chapter 27, verse 1. And what I'm going to do is read to you today, in bits and pieces, all of chapter 27. It's a great story. I think you'll enjoy it, but we're going to cover a whole chapter. So let's start out in chapter 27, verse 1. "And when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in a ship of Adramidium, which was about to sail to the ports along the coast of Asia, we put to sea, accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. The next day we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends and be cared for. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra and in Lycia. There the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus. And as the wind did not allow us to go farther, we sailed under the lee of Crete off Salmone. Coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia." Okay, that was a lot of names. Tough names. Why would you want to read that in public? That's ridiculous. Did you see Cnidus in there? C-N-I-D. That's not a real word. Somebody made that up. That is not right. But here's what we glean from that. And this is history. This is not myth. This is not legend. This is actually Luke, the author of Acts, is on board the ship. We are reading his travel log. This is his travel journal. This is a real deal. This happened in history. In fact, this chapter is crammed with nautical language. See, what this is, in ancient literature, this is the most extensive account of nautical travel. People will study this, not for the scripture, but just for nautical stuff. Like, it's crazy. So it is what we're going to read today is a nail biter of a sea journey. If any of you are familiar with Shackleton and his voyage on the Endurance, great book. I loved reading that. It's a nail biter. That's what this is going to be today. It's a nail biter of a saga of a sea journey. Paul is under the guard of a guy named Julius. He's a centurion over about 100 soldiers, as I said. And actually, this guy's name is Julius. He's the guy that invented Orange Julius. Yeah, I made that up. There's some guy in California in 1920. Don't write that down. You don't need that, right? That's garbage. So anyway, this guy Julius, he is in charge of not only Paul, but did you catch the other prisoners? Now, Paul stands out as one of the prisoners because he is a Roman citizen. He has allowed companions to go travel with him. And he's also not condemned. He's not guilty at this point. He's going to trial. The other prisoners, not so much. Those guys were already found guilty. They're condemned. They were likely very guilty, horrible people. Unfortunately, their fate is they are being carted off to Rome. Why? The gladiatorial games. So Rome has this voracious appetite for human flesh. They love to throw people into the games and watch them die for entertainment. It's disgusting, but that's what they did. And so these prisoners would probably be being carted there for the games. So the way they get there then is they catch a small, they're in Caesarea, they catch a small coastal hopper. This is a smaller ship. It's not open to like the open seas. It can't go out there very far. So it just skips along the ports along the coast. But they know in order to get to Rome, they're going to need to catch a bigger ship. So they're waiting until they get to a big port so they can get on and transfer to a big ship. And that's what happens in Myra. Myra is a big, big port. And if you caught it, that's where they switched ships. They got onto a ship from Alexandria, a grain ship. Okay, so that's Alexandria's down in Egypt. Egypt was the breadbasket of the Roman Empire, right? So Rome's this huge empire, a lot of mouths to feed. They did a lot of farming down in Alexandria. They'd take these enormous ships to transport the grain up to Rome. Ships were big, like over 100 feet long. That's twice as big as the ship that Columbus used to cross the Atlantic. It is a big ship. And there were many people on board. This chapter will tell us later. There were 276 people on board. This is a big ship. So they're able to get to Rome on it. Now let's look at the map. Let me show you kind of what's been going on. You see down in the bottom right is Jerusalem. Above that is Caesarea. That's where they start. They ported at Sidon. Then they went to the lee of Cyprus to the east of it. And then up around, and they got over to Myra there. You see, that's where they switched to the Egyptian grain ship. Now, from Myra to get to Rome, if you look in the upper left, there's Rome, and you see the boot of Italy up there. So they should have sailed north of Crete. See, right in the center is that big island of Crete. They should have sailed north of it. But they were blown way off course. Already the journey is not going well. And they're blown off course, and they end up down underneath on the bottoms of the south side of Crete in a port called Fair Havens near a town called Lycia. So things are already not going well, and they make a harbor in Fair Havens. But now there's a contention. There's a concern that is going to arise. Let's pick up the story in verse 9. Since much time had passed, and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our own lives." But the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbor was not suitable to spend the winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there, on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. Okay, so it started out by saying the fast is over and the weather gets really dangerous. That's why I don't skip a meal, right? I'm serving you people. I feel if I fast, the weather gets bad, I'm going to eat for you. I love you. I'm here for you, right? So no, that's not what's going on there. Well, the fast it's talking about is an annual Jewish festival, the Day of Atonement. What that does is it puts it on the calendar. This is Luke telling us that this is late fall. It's knocking up against November. That's when sea journey on the Mediterranean gets really, really dangerous. And so what most sailors would do about that point is they would winter in a port. They would find a port, they'd drop the anchor, and they'd stay there for 2-3 months until it was safe to sail again. In order to do that, they like to be in a good port. So Paul knows it's time to stay put. He is an experienced sea traveler. He's been on 11 sea voyages. He's logged about 3,500 miles at sea. He's already been shipwrecked 3 times. He knows what this looks like, okay? And so he says, "Dudes, We've got to stay right here. We got a winter here in Fairhaven." Now, the problem is the pilot, or that would have been the captain of the ship, and the owner, who happens to be on board on this journey, they say not so much. They think we got to get out of here. Why? Because Fairhaven is a small port. Now, if you're a sailor and you're going to stay somewhere for like 2-3 months, you're looking for nightlife. There's not good nightlife in Fairhaven. But if we can get a little bit to the west on the island of Crete, get over to Phoenix, they have the best restaurants. Right? So like they're excited. They're going to chance it. And let's get over and see if we can get to that better port and spend the winter there. So they won't listen to Paul's advice. Now, there's not much Paul can do. He's just a passenger. Even worse, he's a prisoner. So he can't really force their hand, and they set out to sea. Let's pick it up in verse 13. Now, when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore. So basically, it's like, shut up, Paul. See, the wind's fine. We're great. And so they weigh the anchor. They pull up the anchor, and they sail. And then we encounter a but. But soon a tempestuous wind called the Northeaster struck down from the land, and when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Cotta, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtis, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest laid on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. Oops. The weather started getting rough. The big old ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the grain ship would be lost. And if you're laughing, it's because you're old and you recognize Gilligan's Island, just like I do. Good for you. All right, so they are in the thick of it, and they to the point where they abandon all hope. So they're in crisis mode. So first what they do is they drag in the ship's boat. So this big ship, when it would go into a port and drop anchor, they need a boat to ferry back and forth to shore. So it would operate in that way as well as a lifeboat. They tow it behind them on a rope. But now it's getting waterlogged, so they've got to drag a full lifeboat up onto it. So it was with difficulty. They get it up on the deck. The next thing they do is they run ropes around the ship. So they put them over the bow and they bring it back. And so they have ropes going around to try to keep the hull together. It's that bad, okay? Then it says that they drop the ship's gear. This would have been like a sea anchor. They would have taken one of the sails and drop it in the water behind them because they're just being blown all over. They don't know where they are. And so they're trying to stay put. So this is like they're dragging a sea anchor, basically. It also says that they try to lighten the ship. At first, they throw the cargo overboard. Then it says that they threw the tackle. Now, that would have probably been like the beam to the main sail. Okay, check this out. When a sailor throws the beam to the main sail overboard, not good, right? They're throwing like majors. Anything they can throw. You know what? Throw the pilot overboard. Like, he's expendable, right? Like, what? No, that's not fair. Okay, so reason why they're lighting it, they are afraid of running aground on the Syrtis. Now, this is a sandy shoal off the north coast of Africa. And so it is known as a graveyard of ships. And when you are afraid of running a ship aground, you got to lighten it to get it up in the water, right? So, because you're going to hit something, so if we get stuff off the boat goes higher in the water and we can clear stuff. That's what they're doing. They're trying to lighten the ship. They also have absolutely no idea where they are. If you look at the end of that passage there, it says they can't see sun or stars. They are in a hurricane. They're in a gale force thing. And they can't see the sky. Pastor Jared told you last week, they didn't have a compass back then. The way they navigated was by looking at the sky, the sun and the stars. So now they are lost. And so is their hope. They have abandoned all hope. And they are done. But then Paul speaks up. Look what he says in verse 21. Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and had not set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and to whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. you must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island. So Paul starts out with a hearty, I told you so. And yet he's not just being a jerk. Like, he had input back then, but he was just totally dismissed and ignored. He has more input now, and he's got to start out with, hey, remember how you didn't listen to me last? Are we going to do that again? Like, are you ready to hear? Oh, you want to hear what I have to say? Okay, let's talk. And so now he's going to tell them that, look, I serve this one God. You guys don't. You don't know him, but I serve him. I belong to him. And he sent a messenger, an angel, to talk to me. And let me tell you what he said. Paul relays to them, the boat will be lost. I think at that moment, he looked over at the owner and winked. It's on you, buddy. You know, like, so anyway, the boat's going to be lost, but none of the people will die. Everybody is going to be saved. I want to remind you guys of something. Remember, God has a plan. Paul has a promise. God said, Paul, I'm going to get you to Rome. So Paul already knows that Paul lives through it. That's not new information. The question is, what about the other 275 people on board? That's the question. And evidently, Paul has been praying for them and asked God, God, will you spare them along with me, please? Because look how it's worded. It says, God has granted you all those who sail with you. You made a request, Paul. Okay, you can have them. And we pick it up again in verse 27. It says, when the 14th night had come, as we were being driven along across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. I love that. You know how there are times in our, like, most people in our country don't pray that often, but then there's those critical moments when everybody starts praying. Okay, this is one of those moments. Oh, everybody on that ship starts praying, right? And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. I hope you caught it at the beginning. They've been in a hurricane for 2 weeks, 14 days, right? Now, they sense land is coming. I don't know if the sailors heard something and they sense it's coming. So they start to take soundings. They let down a rope, basically, with knots on it, and they figure out it's 20 fathoms. That's 120 feet. That was at midnight. So you get that they're doing this day and night. Nobody sleeps. Nobody eats. They're all tossed about. They're too nauseous to eat anyway. And they're not eating or sleeping. And they take the sounding 120 feet. Then they wait just a little bit. They take another sounding 90 feet. You know what that means? The floor of the sea is coming up to meet them quick. We're getting toward land quick. And so they know that they are about to just destroy the ship onto some rocks. So they start dropping anchors all over the place. They put 4 anchors off the stern, the back of the boat. Then the sailors, realizing this probably isn't going to work out well, they come up with a plan. They're going to take the, under false pretense, they're going to take that ship's boat and put it back in the water. And you know what we need to do? We need to go to, all the sailors need to get in that boat because we got to attach an anchor to the bow, to the front of the boat. You don't call us, we'll call you, okay? So they get down in there and they're going to just take off. They're going to just screw everyone on the boat, we're out of here. Paul understands what's going on, and so he tells the centurion, they're kept on the boat, they cut the ship's boat loose, and they let it float away. The message is, we're all in this together. We're all in this together. I will not sing High School Musical. But we're all in this together, so they're in. And then we pick it up in verse 33. As the day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. So this ship becomes a gluten-free establishment, right? So they did that. They threw it out into the sea, but first they decide to carb up. And the reason why is because they have not been able to eat for 2 weeks. And they are just tired. And Paul's like, look, if we're about to swim to shore, you need some energy. You need some strength. You got to eat something. And so they eat up first. And what Paul does in the midst of that, he's encouraging them. But at the same time, he decides, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. And so he worships and prays to his God, gives thanks to his God. He breaks bread and he eats. And so he is in the midst of this storm on that ship. He is saying, I am clearly a believer in Jesus Christ. And he's living out his life before Jesus. And then we come to the very end of the story here. Last of the chapter is this. Verse 39. Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. I mean, do you feel the tension in the midst of this? Morning is dawning. The ship is stuck on a reef offshore, and it is just being torn apart by the surf. And so the clock is running down. Like, okay, it's about to be the end of this story one way or the other. And many couldn't swim, but some could. And so the idea, you jump overboard and swim. But then the soldiers go, oh, wait a minute. What if some of the prisoners swim away and escape? Remember that for a Roman soldier in charge of a prisoner condemned to die, if that prisoner escapes and gets away, the death sentence transfers to the soldier who should have watched him. So they realize if they escape, we're dead. So you know what? Hey, let's just cut our losses and we'll slit their throats. And so they're just going to kill them. But the centurion, something is happening in Julius' heart, and he says no. He squashes that plan, and all of them get to safely to the beach. And to this day, on the island of Malta, that sandy beach is called St. Paul's Bay. It's where they all got ashore. That's a great story, isn't it? A great sea voyage story. We spent most of our time just telling you the story. Now I want to say, what can we learn from it? And there's a lot of directions we could go with this. But what I want to drill down on, I'm struck by how Paul cared for people. People he shouldn't have cared for. People who are unlovable. People who are hurtful to him. And yet, here he is. He's not only in a literal hurricane. He is in a storm of relationships on that ship. He's in the storm. But Paul is the calm in the midst of the storm. There's something going on there that I want us to learn from. Is he in a storm of relationships on that ship? Yeah, let me show it to you. Look, think of who was on the ship. Number one, there were the soldiers. These were Paul's oppressors. Remember, Paul is an innocent man that has been held in prison for over 2 years. Now he's been carted off to Rome. He might be dying there. These are the soldiers who are taking him there as well. Those are the guys who want to slit his throat and then swim away to safety. Those guys. Also, there's the other prisoners. Now, these were probably very nasty, messy people, condemned to die. They were truly guilty. They were scum. And then thirdly, there's the sailors. The guys that totally dismissed Paul's input and got them in trouble. And then they were going to deceive and betray and abandon and let everyone on the ship die as they rowed away. That's who's on the ship. And Paul is assured of his safety. Remember that. He knows he lives through this. If I'm in his shoes, I'm like, screw you guys. You're fish food. I'm out. But not Paul. Paul is praying for their safety. He's praying for their lives. He's doing everything he can to love them and serve them. And I want us to learn from that today. I'm going to give you six things I noticed there. The first one is that we have to get on the ship. Get on the ship. What ship? Relationship. That is mean. I will never do that to you again. I am sorry, but I had to do it once. Get on the ship. Look, Paul got on the ship. Did you notice that? Now, he was a prisoner. He was forced to get on the literal ship, but he chose to get on the relationship. He chose to care for these people that were hurtful to him. He chose to love them. That was a choice of his. And yes, folks, let's acknowledge relationships hurt, don't they? They hurt. Because we do relationship in the storm of this fallen world. And in the storm of this fallen world, there are fallen people in fallen relationships in a fallen world, and relationships hurt. But we got to acknowledge that I not only am hurt by people, I hurt people. I'm on both ends of that. I'm not Jesus, neither are you. Relationships hurt. But even though it's painful, there is purpose in relationships. We are called into relationship as disciples of Christ. You see, both for you and them, there's benefit. For you, God will use those painful relationships to grow you and sharpen you and sanctify you and prepare you. You need him. And he will use you in the other people's lives on the ship. They need you. We are called into relationship. It reminded me of this quote by Paulo Coelho, who said this: the ship is safest when it's in port. But that's not what ships were made for. You want to keep your ship safe in port, but you were made to go out into the open sea, into the storm. Relationships are not safe, but you were made for them. You are called into them. You need to get on the ship. And then secondly, you got to stay in the ship. Now, let me give a caveat here. It's really important. I realize that some relationships are physically and sexually abusive. And so sometimes you need a break, you need boundaries, you need counsel. In some extreme cases, you need to get out. I get that. Okay, set that aside. Do you want to be more like Paul or more like the sailors? Paul had every reason to hate the people on board, get on the boat, and row away. Take care of himself. God made him a promise. He was going to be fine. He didn't. He's stuck. He stayed on the ship in order to love and serve the people that were there, to pray for them and minister to them. Now, the sailors, on the other hand, they were the ones that ought to have stayed on. They were responsible for the ship and the people, and they tried to get on and row away to save themselves. Do you want to be more like Paul or more like the sailors? I know it hurts on that ship. Who do you want to be more like? And that's when Paul realized that though it looked hopeless, I mean, they were abandoning all hope, right? But Paul knew God. Paul knew God could get them through. And I know there could be a painful relationship. Do you believe that God could get you through? So cut that escape boat away and let it float away and stick. Stay on the ship. Well, thirdly, realize that you are a passenger, not the pilot. Look, in some cases, you're just along for the ride and you're not in control, right? And don't worry, God's in control. God's got a plan. Paul's got a promise. He'll get him to Rome, right? But you need to realize the limits of your control, of your responsibility. Don't feel responsible for the decisions in the lives of others. Now, Paul wants, he hopes, he prays, God, give me their lives. Let me save them. But God could have said no. Paul couldn't control that. He had to put that in God's hands. He made a request, but then he had to trust God and walk away on that one. I think there is a lot of wisdom in learning to feel responsible only for that for which God has truly made you responsible. God didn't make Paul the pilot. And there is a lot of peace and a lot of calm that can come into our lives in the midst of a stormy relationship when we are able to say, you know what, I'm in submission to God. I am not in control. You might have a boss at work. Let's say this boss is steering the ship into the storm. And you're like, you're crazy. That is not good. And what you need to do is respectfully speak up, just like Paul did. But after he spoke up, did you notice that Paul didn't lead a mutiny? He didn't grab the wheel. He said, you know what? I'm not responsible for that. I got to let that go. So yeah, you might need to respectfully speak up, but then you realize you're not the pilot. You're not the boss. The boss gets to steer the ship. Now, if your main goal is, nope, I have to save this ship, and you're obsessed with saving the ship, that's going to be really tough on you. But if you submit to the plan of God in your life, you realize that God might have a shipwreck planned for you, like he did for Paul. But he'll get him to Rome. It'll be okay. And you can start to release that and let go of that. You see, I've found over time that I can't make choices for other people. Oh, I so wish I could sometimes. And I can't. And if I could, you know what? They'd end up just about as messed up as I am. It's probably good that I can't. But you got to let it go. You got to be a passenger, not the pilot. And then fourthly, I want you to hold on to the right things. I'll give you a hint here. The right things are not things. You got to hold on to the right things. They're throwing things overboard. What is it that Paul didn't throw overboard? People. He did not throw people overboard. Why? Because those were souls with eternal destinies. They're made in the image of God. They count and they matter. And we are called as disciples of Christ to go out into the storm of relationships on this messy boat, and we are to be salt and we are to be light. We are to, at our expense, be a saving influence on the people around us. That's what Paul was doing. At his expense, he was saving the people on that boat. And it cost him. It was hard. But we are called to do that. We don't throw people overboard. And you know what? Sometimes you can't control when this strikes. That was another thing in the midst of this. So Paul's got a plan to get to Rome, right? And all these people are messing up his plan. I want you to say something after me. People over plans. People over plans. We got to let go of our plans sometimes to love and serve people. That's what Paul is doing. So Paul could have been in the mindset that my mission is to get to Rome and my ministry starts at Rome. And God's saying, no, your ministry's on this boat right now in the midst of the storm. And some of you have your mind on some goal, some destiny, and you're saying, man, once I get there, that's when ministry will start. I heard the phrase that ministry is what happens when you're planning your next mission trip. Right? So how many of us are waiting for that big ministry opportunity and we are ignoring the ship of relationships around us right now to start ministering there? Hold on to the right things. But then in contrast to that, number five, dump some stuff overboard. There's some stuff that needs to go overboard. Now, to get through a storm, I told you, you've got to lighten the load of the boat. And if you don't, you will run the thing aground. So if you're not going to throw people overboard, what do you throw overboard? Your bitterness. It's got to go. And that's fully in your control. You got to throw that thing overboard because it is weighing you down. It's killing you. Maybe you've seen this meme. That ships don't sink because of the water around them. Ships sink because of the water that gets in them. Don't let what's happening around you get inside you and weigh you down. It's not the storm around you. It's not, yeah, you're in the midst of this terrible fallen world and it is hard and it is stormy, but it's the storm that you allow into your heart. That bitterness, when you allow that inside you to control you, you got to dump that overboard. You got to get rid of that. It will wreck you on the rocks. And sixth and last, I want us to follow our true captain right into the storm. Follow in his footsteps. Do what he did. You know what? He forgave us. We have to forgive as we have been forgiven. It's what Jesus did for us. He got on the boat. We're about to celebrate the incarnation of Christ. That is the time where God stepped out of heaven and got into our messy, stormy boat. He didn't have to. It didn't make sense. It turned out to be really hurtful to him. At his expense, then, he got us through the storm. We were the ones trying to slit his throat, to lie, to betray, to abandon. That's how we treated him. And yet he came on board and got us safe at his expense. That's why Paul did it. He's just following his true captain. He's following Jesus into the storm. And if Jesus could do that for us, could we do that for others? Could we forgive as we have been forgiven? You have a Pastor Rick, they don't deserve it. Of course they don't deserve it. That's why it's called forgiveness. You're forgiving something that is horrible, that doesn't deserve forgiven. Did you deserve forgiveness from Christ? No. but he forgave. We forgive as we've been forgiven. And so we give that forgiveness. And so we have to forgive. And the reason why is because it's already been paid for by Jesus. I can't require Jesus and you to pay for it. And then on a very human level, I'm saying forgiveness is this. Forgiveness is where I pick up the tab for your sin. You've hurt me. And I say, you know what? I'm not going to require it of you. I will bear the pain for that. That's forgiveness. Can you do that? Man, that's hard. That is really hard to do. I need people to do that for me. I need to do that for others. Let me ask you guys some questions. How many of you realize that this world needs to change? Raise your hands. If you realize this world needs to change, raise your hands. Okay. Pretty much all of us. All right. Next question. How many of you want this world to change? All right. Same hands. Okay. Next question. How many of you are willing to change? Oh, those went up a lot slower. You get it? This world is a storm, and it's really, really hard. And we know it's messed up, and we know it needs to change, but we don't want to be the change. What if Jesus is calling us to be the calm in the midst of the storm? Because he did it for us, and we're supposed to be the ones that love and serve, even though it's hard and hurtful at times. To that end, bow your heads for a second. Father, I want to begin by asking you to put on everyone's mind right now someone or a group of someone's that have been on their ship that have been really hurtful, and frankly, we want to get away. And yet maybe you are calling us to get on the ship, to stay on the ship, to let you be in control. We're just a passenger. Can we hold on to those people, the right things, and dump our bitterness overboard? Why? Because Jesus led us there first. Could you help us right now to determine before you to respond in the midst of the storm of relationships? Take us there, Lord, please. And I pray in Christ's name. Amen.